on Milwaukee Public Radio Now. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Last month, we introduced you to David Howell, a Milwaukee native who embarked on a solo bike tour from Seattle, Washington, back to Milwaukee. That trip and the journals Howell kept during his month on the bike resulted in his recent book, The Descent into Happiness, a bicycling journey over the Cascades and Rockies and across the Great Plains.
In our last conversation, Howell described what inspired the trip, the planning, and the mental components of such an extended ride. Today, we bring you part two of that conversation, and Howell starts by explaining the concept of his controlled risk.
I think the best thing I could do in preparation was just be prepared for the unexpected and know that I didn't exactly know what I was getting into, which I find really kind of exciting. I like the adventure part of that. And it kind of gets back to that idea of controlled risk, where it's not foolishness. I think a lot of people I talk to about this experience think it's kind of redonk to go ride your bike for 30 days in a row and try to travel a lot of the country. A lot of people, I think, assume that it's very dangerous to be out there, maybe because they've never ridden their bikes outside of their neighborhoods. But I wanted to have that experience. I had read enough stories written by other people who had the experience that I knew, you know, there was an element of safety to it if you planned and you prepared. Of course, you know, there are people who experience tragedy out there. There are people who, riding their bikes, get hit by cars and whatnot. And you have to account for those variables as well. And I did that as best as I possibly could, while knowing that there is an element to risk, just like there's an element to risk in riding my bike to work every day.
Well, and you didn't exactly go into this not knowing what direction you were going. You did have some resources and a general idea of places you could stay. So when you're just biking around as much as you can in town, did you do any other physical preparations, like any strength training? Because your bike has an additional 50 pounds of gear that you're lugging around. Just kind of go into any of the other physical aspects that you either needed to do, or did you just accept that this is whole new territory, and once I'm on my bike, that I got to adjust and deal with what's happening?
Well, I've done a lot of reading on training for different kinds of endurance events. And one thing that I've learned is that the more years you do this kind of activity, the more likely you can continue to do it. So, yeah, I did 6 Ironman triathlons over the span of 6 years and decided to transition into bike touring because, you know, it takes a lot of time to train for Ironman. But I think that that really does something to one's body in terms of muscle memory, but also just in terms of enabling yourself to know how long you can spend working out in a given day, if that makes sense. So that's why I think when I had this experience of the long bike ride, it wasn't that much of a learning curve in terms of physical fitness because my body knew the stress I was going to put it under. Certainly in the first few days, it was difficult. I think on the second day, I had a huge bonk because I was so overwhelmed with what I was doing that I wasn't drinking enough water, I wasn't eating enough food, and I just had to stop on the side of the road for about an hour and eat a jar of peanut butter and drink 16 ounces of water and try to get to the point where I could keep moving forward. So, yeah, you know, it's a learning experience. You make mistakes, hopefully you get back in the bike and keep going.
How did you adjust to that in keeping a healthy mind and body? That's one of the main goals, of course, that you had. So when you had that first rock in the road and needed to really be aware of, okay, I need to be fueling my body a lot more, keeping on going. So as you went further and into more days of riding, different landscapes, how did you adjust your mind and body to keep that healthy?
Well, I learned a lot from other cyclists because, you know, once you go out there, you meet other people who are doing the same thing. I was lucky in that on the third day, I met 3 guys who just graduated from college on the East Coast, and they were, I think, 45 days into their bike ride across the country. So I was 3 days in, they had 3 days left. So I just sat them down and offered to make them dinner and drilled them with questions to find out all of the things that they had done and learned along the way. So when I told them that the previous day I you know, completely depleted myself. They kind of laughed because they made the same mistake going out. So that gave me a degree of comfort. I wasn't the first person to make that mistake. But then they told me that your body just acclimates, your mind acclimates. They were glad that they were doing it among the three of them. They were very, very good friends. But I think they were each interested in having the experience of a solo ride, maybe at a later date. So, every day I met more cyclists. 2 days later, when I was crossing into Montana, I met a couple from Iowa who started in Maine, who had retired from their farm. I think they were in their 70s. And they were traveling all the way back on their bikes, kind of hotel camping, credit card camping. But it just gave me hope for the future that this is something I can do for the rest of my life, for the next 40 years. I met other cyclists who had just done the Rocky Mountains, a lot of off-road stuff, which made what I was doing look easy in comparison. And they're just very normal people having an amazing experience, but no one necessarily defined it as amazing. It was just that heightened state of normal.
Do you find, as a self-proclaimed introvert, that this was the perfect balance of interacting with people when you wanted to, and if you needed to, you could just continue riding on the road by yourself?
Yeah. When I planned out the trip, I didn't think about how I would be around people more on the first third of it because I was in the mountains. And, a lot of people will do a ride that starts in Seattle and ends at Glacier National Park. Then they'll just hop on the Amtrak and train their way back to Seattle. Or they'll throw their bikes into the back of a U-Haul and maybe go down to Yosemite. Because the prospect of biking across the Great Plains is arduous in the minds of many. So, fortunately, I had ignorance on my side. I didn't know what I was getting into. And I just started riding across those big, beautiful Great Plains where there's hardly anyone. But I think, once again, the quality of the human interaction was enhanced because it was less frequent. I was looking forward to the next time I would see somebody. And the acts of generosity that people were exercising grew exponentially. It was not uncommon for someone to stop and offer me a bottle of water or to stop and let me know that they were going to be camping down the road and I was more than welcome to join them for dinner. This happened on a daily basis, and it really gave me an appreciation for the human spirit and for the people who live out there in the middle of nowhere.
In this whole journey, you have three things that stand out in particular that you learned. Number one, solitude feeds the marriage, and marriage feeds the solitude. Number two, the Northern Tier diet working. And number three, I need to exercise my humanity more consistently. So let's go down into this. And obviously, you were touring alone and learned a lot about yourself, but a lot of these other things, these three lessons, interconnect with other people. So to start, solitude feeding the marriage and the marriage feeding the solitude, because I imagine a lot of people would look upon you with skepticism when you say, oh, yeah, my wife's all good with this. Like, I'm going to be going away for this amount of time. Over a month. But you still kept in contact with your wife daily. So that, to me, that was curious on how your marriage was fed through this solo journey.
Yeah, it's interesting because, my wife is my best friend. We spend a lot of time together by choice. But we're both introverted, so we have to enable ourselves to spend time on our own as well. And as I mentioned earlier, this was the great problem that I had to solve because my whole life with her, really my whole adult life, has involved this conflict. And early in our relationship, it was difficult because I would go and I would travel, backpacking through Europe for 5 months while we were dating, maybe another trip through Southeast Asia for a few months. And when I would come back from those experiences, I just didn't know how to reengage in the relationship. That was why it was a bit of an outlier on this trip. How could I go back into our marriage again after I had been away from it for 30 days? But I think that was the realization. And it didn't really hit me all at once. It was more over the span of a couple of days. And that's where I think the writing really helped as well, because it is such a wonderfully reflective activity that I kept writing down everything I was learning while I was riding my bike. And you're correct, a lot of these things tended to overlap. So when I realized that this time alone gave me ample opportunity to appreciate our relationship, I knew that it was helping the marriage, even though it wasn't directly helping our relationship. So I had that idea. Well, you know, maybe time alone means I'll be better prepared to be with her. And when I'm with her, and if I really make the most of my time with her, then maybe that's going to prepare me for those opportunities in my day-to-day life to be alone. So instead of letting those two things be at odds, I just had to make a mental shift in order to let them complement each other. And it's really working.
Secondly, the Northern Tier diet, you mentioned you had difficulties gaining back the weight after you trained for an Ironman event or something, that you didn't keep consistency between the events. So how did it follow through after the end of this trip?
Yeah, well, you know, Milwaukee is a beer city, and
yes.
I love beer. So one thing that surprised me was I was dropping about a pound a day. I think I lost 25 pounds over the 32 days of the trip. So at the end of the ride, I thought, well, okay, it feels good to be lighter. I wonder if I can maintain this in my life back in Milwaukee. So I went to a nutritionist, and she told me everything that I would need to do. Probably, you know, less beer, maybe less bourbon, stay away from rices and grains. And I failed miserably at all of that because I love to have a beer at the end of the day and eat good food. So my plan is to just have another big bike ride and drop weight again and see if I can not make the same mistake. But it's something that kind of surprised me. I didn't really plan on losing a lot of weight. It just kind of happened. Had I been more intentional about shifting my lifestyle in that direction, I think it probably would have stuck better. But there was another problem I was trying to resolve. So I was okay with it when I did get back to Milwaukee, and I just went right back to my original weight.
Well, and I'd say you deserve a drink after all.
Yeah. Well, and it's not hard to find people who like enjoying beer out there on the open road. That was another fun part of it.
And lastly, exercising your humanity more consistently. On the road, you encountered people being very generous without any prompting. So how did you take this back with you and apply this here in Milwaukee?
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, before this trip, I wasn't a real big fan of our species. One of the reasons why I think I enjoy being alone so much is, I wouldn't say an aversion to human contact, but I don't like being disappointed by people. So when you're out there and you are consistently running into people who are willing to invite you into their home or share a meal, or just have a conversation with you and to listen to you tell their story. When that happens 32 days in a row, it's got to leave a mark. And if you ignore that information, I think it's to your detriment. So it made me believe in humanity once again. And that's something that I have been able to hold on to, fortunately. But it's also something that I think I need to maintain. So that's why I need to go back on another long bike ride, is to once again meet great people out there on the open road and probably look for more people in my community here in Milwaukee who share those same qualities. But I still believe there is something to be said for the open landscape and how that must change one's mindset. I mean, if you live in a small town like Gackle, Montana, where there's only 57 people, there's probably other people who spend a lot of time alone doing their work or whatever it is that they do. That has to have an effect as compared to living in a dense urban population.
Well, this book was certainly enlightening, and I look forward to hearing about your next grand adventure this summer.
Yeah.
And Dave, thanks so much for coming in to talk about it.
Well, thank you for hosting me.
David Howell is a Milwaukee native, a professor in the Humanities Department at the Milwaukee School of Engineering, and author of The Descent into Happiness. Howell will be hosting a discussion on the mindful cyclist at the Urban Ecology Center tomorrow night. You can find the first part of our interview and more information about him at WUWM.com. you.